Welcome to Cuckoo Bananas. I'm Mike Mongiorno. I'm joined, as always, by Kate Ganey. Doing a little dance right now. Still doing a little dance.
I'm
I'll
feeling
do the
good.
color commentary.
Feeling dancy.
Feeling dancy. Are you in a good mood?
Hey. I am in a good mood.
Me too.
Actually. And that's good because I've not been in a good mood for a while.
Well, is there any reason why your mood is good? Or it just happens to be good?
There's a reason, but I want to save it for when we're talking about
Good
what's
things.
good.
You ever like should feel bad and then you feel good and you're like, why am I feeling good right now? I always try to
And
just
then
go with it.
usually I start feeling bad once. Because if I do that, if I start thinking that, like, why do I feel good? Because there are a million reasons I should feel bad. So if I start thinking that, I will get lost. So I just can't. I have to avoid that entirely.
Yeah, I feel like feeling good is correct. So no matter how what's going on, if I'm feeling good, I'm like, all right, I'm just gonna let this be.
Yeah, I must be doing something right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So how is 2023 going for you so far, Miss Kate Ganey?
It's great, honestly. There's been a lot of self-improvement work and all that good stuff.
Really?
I feel like I'm, steadily climbing upward. I don't feel like I'm, slipping back into any sort of negative patterns or anything. I really feel as if I'm aware of myself
Yeah.
lately in a better way than I've been in a while.
That's awesome.
Yeah, how's your 2023 treating you? God, that sounds so weird.
I know, right? It's like, what are we in the future?
Ugh, right? Damn.
Well, I think I talked about this on the last episode, but in November I started a new job, and that was very hard because, like, for the first November, December, basically for the first 2 months, I was in utter terror every day, which is a particular kind of problem because there's depression, there's anxiety, and then there's like terror. I was in terror every day. I don't know what I'm doing. Am I ever going to know what I'm doing? There's so much to know here. Oh my God. Is this job, am I good enough for this job? Like maybe I couldn't, I thought I, maybe I just can't do this job.
How can I ever possibly integrate all this new information?
Yeah. But now we're at the end of January. Wow, gosh, it's almost been 3 months at this job. And I guess since we're talking about it, I'll go into my good thing. It's better. It's better.
Good. That is a
I'm
good
less
thing.
terrified. Yeah. I still get the Sunday scaries, which is just another capitalism. Like when people like Sunday scaries or oh, you're having a case of the Mondays, it's like all the things you're describing are called capitalism. The
It's
effects.
all internalized capitalism.
Yeah. But I'm getting to a point in my job because my job's supposed to be helping people, but I'm getting to a point 3 months in where I'm finally starting to help people. And that feels great
Good.
because
That's
that's
got to
the
feel more rewarding than trying to, like,
remember how to work this website and how to do this form. When you get down to it, it's like, all right, this is why you do those things to make this person's life better, to help this person get a thing. Yeah, it's definitely better. It's not, I still have like terrifying moments, but I'm getting in, I'm in a weird place because I feel like I'm in a precipice of a really good, what's going to be a really good spot. As I transition out of a very terrifying spot. So tell me your good thing. I mean, if we're in a good mood, let's start with good things.
All right. So I believe I mentioned maybe last time that I had gotten deregistered from school because I had been inactive. I was going through some stuff. I'm officially enrolled to begin school again
Nice.
in like a week.
Nice.
So that's pretty cool. And I found out about a program that my school works with where I can take all my required classes that are not to do with my major
Yeah.
at my own pace. And
Okay.
they don't involve seminars, so I don't have to attend like a Zoom or anything like that, or discussion boards or anything like that. It's
Yeah.
just you do it at your own pace and just get the work done. So theoretically, I could finish a course in a week.
Nice. That's very
Yeah.
cool.
So I'm really excited about that, and I feel hopeful again. School really gives me a sense of purpose and of direction, and it makes me feel like I'm doing something for my future self,
Yeah.
which is hard for me day to day. Like, yes, I do put in the personal work, and I try to be self-aware in my interactions. I try to have good connections with people and all of that stuff. That's important to me. That's incredibly important to me. But it's not necessarily helping my outward life to be better. You know, maybe it's helping me be more at peace with what my circumstances are. But I also need to be doing things to make my circumstances better.
Right. It's a
So,
investment.
right. And that's kind of what school represents to me. And especially like being a stay-at-home parent now and, you know, having not like given up a career. It's not like I went to school for something and was like pursuing something actively. But, you know, I was very into animal medicine, which is what I was doing before I had my kids. And I had intended to pursue that. I really wanted to go to school for that. I wanted to work with large animals.
Yeah.
And now I just feel too old to do that. And that's not, you know, like, oh, you're not too old. I am. Like, my body is too old to work with large animals, you know, to get started now, at least. I'm not in the physical shape that I should be for doing that. And had I started doing that 10 years ago, it would be a different story. But it feels good to really feel like I found a purpose. Like I have a path toward what I ultimately want to achieve, because usually I can only picture the big picture and the ending, and I cannot figure out what the first step is, and I cannot make myself take the first step because I'm not going to see the results until the end. And I can't. I need results.
It's the string of pearls, as
Yep.
Studs says.
As
It's
he says, oh, that man.
it just you just it's just one thing after another. You're just going. It's just forward motion.
Yeah, there's always going to be something. You just,
Yeah.
you know, it's, you just got to keep moving. And some days it's easier to just let that movement be going with the flow. But some days you have to make forward progress. Like, think about those like motorized walkways at the airport.
Yeah.
Like, some days it's cool to just stand there and let the walkway take you.
Yeah.
You know, don't start turning around and walking against it so that you're not
Right.
getting anywhere. But like, just chill. And then, like, some days you can take a few steps and expedite your process and get forward a little quicker and
Yeah.
all that good stuff. All
So,
that good stuff. Zing.
Dinger. So my girlfriend, I don't, I think, wait, did I talk about this last? No, I don't think so, because I don't think it happened yet. My girlfriend's dog died.
Oh.
And so it's kind of and I was very close to the dog. Me and, you know, me and my girlfriend been together 3 years, known each other longer than that. Me and the dog had a very good relationship. The dog over the last year has had one problem after another. We went to the vet 5 times over the last year. At one point, I actually a couple months ago left work. Like I took paid time off in the middle of the day, and luckily this was my old job, so I was very close to my boss, because Jen called me and she was like, I think it's happening now. So I was like, okay. So I called my boss and I was like, I think my dog's gonna die, so I'm gonna take the rest of the day off. And she was like, yeah, go. So we went, like, really,
Right.
like, we're gonna say goodbye. And then they're like, oh no, she's fine. It was always some bullshit. It was always, you know, whatever. I'm not gonna knock the vets. Anyway, things kept getting wrong. She had a growth inside of her that they said was like the size of like fucking coconut, like a huge growth inside of her. And that affected her
Wow.
liver. And 2 or so weeks before she died, my girlfriend noticed that she was like wobbly. She was like falling over and stuff. So we took her to the vet again, and the vet was like, oh, maybe she's taking too much, because she had anxiety, so she had like chill pills. Maybe she's taking too much chill pill. You know, maybe she's just a little stoned. But it ended up not being it. It was, she was, the thing in her liver was going to her brain, and she was having seizures. And it was just getting worse and worse. And my girlfriend actually sent me a video. It's like the saddest video that's ever been filmed in the history of filming things. It was after she had, I think, it was after she had a couple of seizures, and it's just the dog. It's just her dog Penny, like in a room, and Jenna's like, Penny, come here, Penny, come here, and as if like she can't hear her, she's just looking around like she was just born. Like, I don't know where I am or what I'm doing. I have no memory of who you are, of who I am, of where I am. I mean, like, it was like curiosity, but it was just sad because it's just like she's not recognizing anything. And then they were like, I was actually at work in my new job, so I couldn't really take off. Oh, actually, I ended up, but I didn't have, it happened before I got there. I was on my way there, and it happened. And they said, like, she's not gonna, there's anti-seizure medication, but she's gonna keep having them so much that that's not really gonna help. And also the seizures that she's already had may have like done brain damage, which is why she's acting so out of it. So she was 2 days away from being 10. It was almost her birthday. And Jen is, I've never known anybody who loves her dog more than Jen loved her dog. And everyone loves their dog. But she just was so, like, we would be out in the world doing whatever, and she'd be like, what do you think Penny's doing right now? And I'm like, I don't know. She's a dog. She's sitting somewhere. And she's just been, I'm sad. I'm genuinely sad that Penny's gone, and I miss Penny. But more than that, what I'm dealing with, which is, I don't, shouldn't say dealing with because it's not a problem, but what's going on with me is I am worried about her. And she has no obligation to be happy. She has no obligation to rush through this process. She has no obligation
of course.
You know what I mean? I'm just expressing to you that what I feel is helpless. Because I wish I could do anything.
Right. It's hard to watch someone you love hurt. Right. I mean, it's not a pain you can do anything about.
And Jen is a typically more sunny person than I am. She doesn't have clinical depression. But lately she's said things to me like, what if I'm never happy again? I haven't felt happy in so long.
Aww.
And she's like, she's new to a feeling like that. Whereas I'm not.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I'm trying to be listen, the devil inside you now is, he needs to convince you that it'll never be good again. That's how he thrives. But you just have to not believe him, because it will be good again. But it's just been, it's just been so hard. And, you know, we could be doing okay, and then something little will happen that'll trigger us. And then it like literally like rips my heart out. So that has been happening. And that sucks.
I'm so sorry. It's very difficult. It does suck. It really sucks. And, you know, I think I've said this before, but I believe that being touched closely by grief does something to you. Being touched closely by death does something to you. One of the best representations I know of that is the Thestrals in Harry Potter, and how only people who have witnessed death can see them. That's a thing. Like, once you're touched that closely by death in your life, there's a different weight to everything.
Right.
And a pet is part of the family. You see them every day. You care for them. You love them. They love you. Like, there's no, you're never like mad at each other. Like, there's nothing but pure love and care in that relationship. And it's a very, very difficult one to lose. And that pain is really, really hard. And a lot of people don't understand or respect that pain, which makes it even more frustrating.
No, I think we should evolve to a point where you can have bereavement for the death of an animal. You should be able to take off work the way you can if your mother dies.
Yeah. You should have a couple of days, a week or whatever, put yourself together. Like, it's very difficult to grieve. And that 1000% extends to animals, to pets. Like,
right.
It's just as difficult to lose them. You connect with this little soul that's just not in your life anymore. And that sucks.
Yeah. And
a whole lot.
Grieving's not a straight line. You know, something I keep thinking about that I don't know exactly how to articulate is, like, when you lose somebody, do you ever stop missing them? No, you don't. But at the same time,
no,
you don't feel that loss so sharply constantly. Even if you carry it around with you, even if with you is always this loss, it would be wrong, but it's hard to articulate because it would be incorrect to say that it shrinks, because it doesn't shrink, but other things grow around it. Your heart grows around it.
I was about to say, I've seen a great visualization for this idea. And the visualization is a box around a ball. And at the beginning of grieving, the ball takes up the entire box. And as time goes on, the box gets bigger. And so the ball is smaller. And the ball's bouncing around. And every now and then, it's going to hit an edge.
Yeah, yeah.
Every now and then, you're going to be, you know, hit by the grief or whatever. But sometimes you're just kind of bouncing around. And it's still there. The box is still there.
Yeah.
But you just haven't touched it.
Yeah.
And every now and then you're going to. You have no choice but to carry the grief. I'm sorry, it sucks. There's no two ways about it. Like, you carry the grief forever. You don't reach the end of grieving. That's not a possibility. You just you grow around it.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's going through a lot of the typical things that grieving people go through. Like, she said to me, "What if I forget things about her? What if I forget her the way she communicated, or the way she like looked," which is a pretty normal grieving fear that you're going to forget.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just try to be there. It's like, when John Green in, Anthropocene Reviewed talks about when he was a chaplain in a hospital, his boss would say, "Don't do something, just stand there." As an ironic twist on "don't stand, just stand there, do something." As a chaplain,
his
number one job is just stand there while people are dealing with this
grief. Just be there.
And it's it's what I'm trying to do, and it's I don't know, it's
really
hard.
All you can do.
Yeah.
It's hard when you want to be a problem solver. It's hard when you want to take away a loved one's pain, but there's just nothing you can do except be there with them and ride it out, you know, make sure they eat and drink water and take care of themselves and that kind of stuff. Yeah. And all you can do is just be there while the difficult things are happening, and then be there for the good days. And, you know, just understand that, like, that's a part of this person now.
Yeah.
That's what it's like to love someone who's grieving. Like, you have to understand that, like, their grief is a part of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we'll get another dog, and it'll be wonderful. And then in a decade or so, that dog will die too. And that's just how it is.
I am terrified for the day my dog dies.
It's a terrible
thing.
Because their lives move so fast.
I don't know what I'll do. Yeah.
You know, like, they're a puppy. And then at some point you're like, "Oh, they're not a puppy. Oh, they can die." Because you look at a little rambunctious puppy and you're like, "You can't die. You're never going to die. Look at you. You're nothing but pure energy."
Right. People still think my dog is a puppy sometimes, and she's probably about 10.
Yeah.
And, like, you'll think she's a puppy from far away because she's not very big. Like, she looks like she should be bigger, and she has a lot of energy. But as you get closer, you start to see, like, the white in her muzzle.
Yeah.
And she's got skin tags and stuff. Like, she's going to be an old lady.
I love old dogs.
My pup. Oh, I know. They're the best. They're just as wonderful as new dogs.
Yeah. The wisdom that they have.
They're delightful. They're so wise.
They really are.
They're so gentle and sweet.
Yeah.
Like, you never really, like, I'm sure, never mind, I take that entire statement back. I was going to say, you don't really find an old ornery dog, but you totally do.
Yeah, but even those I like because
Yeah.
maybe they've just been through too much shit and maybe they're not comfortable, you
They're
know?
hardened by life.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I dated a girl years ago who had a old ass dog, and this dog was just an asshole, and like you couldn't even like approach the dog, and it was just like, well, that there he is in his corner, just fucking being miserable, and it's like,
It's kind of endearing.
yeah, it is because it's like, all
I
right,
get it.
you've done some shit, you've seen some shit.
Yep.
Dogs deserve, you know, this whole experience the way everyone does. You
They
know?
do. And they're so pure and full of love. Like you, and that's the thing, like it's all, dependent on how they're raised and what their experiences are. A lot like, humans. Like there are certain
Right.
predispositions, but what their experiences are will dictate how they interact with other dogs and with humans and all that. But they're so full of love. Like they're just they want to be a part of a pack. They want to be a part of a
Yeah.
family. They want to feel loved. They want to give love. They want to play. Like they're just such pure, wonderful things.
Yeah. I
Dogs,
love
man.
when
I'm sure
they
cats are cool too, but I never had one. I can't talk about cats like this, but
Yeah.
dogs.
I'm deathly allergic to cats. I wish I wasn't, 'cause I love cats. I don't, why choose? Love them both. They're both awesome.
I agree. And I didn't really have much experience with cats until I worked at the animal hospital because my parents were allergic and or didn't like cats.
Sure.
So like anytime we went to somebody's house where they had cats, they would put them away and so I never was around cats until I was at an animal
Yeah.
hospital and I was like, "Oh, I like these guys too.
Yeah,
Give me
yeah.
some of
You
them."
gotta love an animal whose like first thing is to show you their butthole. Like, hey, what's up? Nice to meet you. Look at my
Huh?
butthole.
Huh? What do you think?
And you're like, oh, all right, okay, great, I guess.
Right, we get right to it, huh?
All right.
Okay.
All
Yeah,
right.
there's really nothing you can hide at that point. If you start with the butthole, it's just
Yeah.
everything is just
Right.
peaches from there or whatever.
So
Oh boy.
this show is for entertainment purposes and as an artistic expression of me and Kate. Please don't take this show as a form of therapy, because
Yeah, no, don't do that.
we are not equipped to help you in that way. We can't hear
Absolutely
you can only hear
no.
us. And even and I you know, Kate's studying
We're still working on helping
psychology.
ourselves.
Yeah, but we're not
I
professionals in
am.
any way. But if you need help,
No. Amateurs.
yeah, we're not the ones. But you know, look for it. And you know,
We
if
do it for the
you are
love.
listening to us and you're thinking of some kind of harm, look at the resources in the description of every episode. So, do you want to talk about studs?
Oh my God, so
I've got a
much.
big one
I
in my
really.
deck, and I can't wait to extend it and get a really big hole.
Right.
No, we're talking about Phil Studs, therapist to the stars.
An illustrious title.
So yeah, there's a documentary on Netflix now that was directed and produced by Jonah Hill, which is about Jonah Hill's therapist, Phil Studs, who I believe is a therapist to the stars. And he's very unique.
Are you saying studs?
Stutz.
Spell it.
Stutz.
Yeah, okay. It sounded like a D for a sec.
Oh.
Yeah, it sounded like you were saying a D for a minute.
It's hard to say. It's like the
Studs.
creator of the Peanuts is Shulz. No, there's no T. It's Shulz.
Shoals.
Yeah, it's not right. Doesn't feel right.
Doesn't. It feels like it should be Schultz.
Yeah.
I was missing.
So
Proceed.
Stutz is an interesting guy. You could definitely tell he's one of these like I'm a doctor or therapist to rich and famous people because I'm kooky and I'm eccentric. But he has a lot of interesting ways of going about what he does that are contrary to what's typically expected from therapy and therapists. And it's also a good documentary about him. So what are your feelings on Stutz?
So first of all, my thoughts of Stutz as a film.
Yes.
I think it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me excited to see more things Jonah Hill does. I really loved how honest it was. I love that they took time after every question that was asked and stuff. And like, it wasn't, you know, they didn't edit out the long pauses and stuff like that. Like, they asked the question and then it was, you know, the continued silence while they thought about their response and then responded. I just loved the format and how like raw it was. I loved the certain like dreaminess of it at points. Thought it was great. And Stutz as a person, I love him. I want to take care of him. And I want him to also give me all the advice and little drawings and note cards.
Yeah.
If I could only afford the therapists and the stars.
Yeah. Yeah. The film itself is very good. The film sort of takes the structure of a therapy session between Jonah Hill and Stutz. But Jonah's the one asking questions. And it's in black and white. The film, the majority of the film, you know, 99% of the film is in black and white, which really fits because it's a very sort of acoustic movie. As you said, there's a lot of silence and a lot of it's very languid in a very good way. It's not boring, but it takes its time. But you're kind of always with it. But the thing that I really like just from the film perspective is like 30 minutes into it, there's another meeting between Jonah Hill and Stutz. And he's like, listen, you know, we've been making this movie for 2 years and I've got to be honest, I've been lying to you, which is I've been coming in here and saying like, oh, things are going good, but I don't think they are. I don't know what's going on with the movie. I don't know what to do with the movie. And he goes, you know, I'm wearing a wig right now because when we started filming, I had long hair and now I don't, but we wanted to match. So I'm wearing a wig. You and I are both wearing the same clothes every time we record. So it seems like it's the same day, but really we've been doing this for 2 years. And as he's saying it, like goes from black and white to color, you see, he goes, this is not your real office. This is a green screen. And you see the background turn into a green screen. And I just really loved the breaking down of the cinematic walls, the elements, to just lay bare what it is, because it's so like in the spirit of what they're trying to do anyway. And it's you know,
yeah, and I feel like sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah.
I feel like it's almost better that it happened that way rather than it going perfectly well the first time and like it, or them just through it and acting like it was, you know, done in one day or whatever. Because that's kind of what the whole thing's about. Right. Is like, you just got to keep moving forward. And when you think you're stuck and you can't go anymore, there is some other way that you'll find. There's always a way to move forward.
Yeah. And I really love the way Stutz reacts to that moment. Because first he's like, I had a feeling that it wasn't going well. But he's also very like caring. You know, he's a good therapist. Like, he seems to appreciate honesty. He's like, I think this is good. I think it's good that this has happened. I think the movie will be better now. You know, he's funny, which I think I've had funny therapists in my life. And I think funny therapists are just very effective. But he does things that
he's honest.
Yeah. But he says like, I love you to Jonah, which is not something a therapist typically would ever say, or they would be instructed to never say that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It almost made me cry when I heard that. I love you. Goodness. Wasn't ready.
He talks about being young when he was
I
first a
loved, I don't.
therapist. I'm sorry.
No, it's we're lagging a little bit. Like, I can hear myself repeating on your end. So, like, I'm talking when you stop, but so are, like, then you're starting again. So I'll just, I'll slow down. Yeah.
He talks about being a young therapist and people coming in feeling like shit and him saying to his boss, like, what can we do? What can we tell these people to help them? And the boss is like, don't you dare. That's not your job. And he was like, well, fuck that. Like, what's the whole point of any of this? Which I think I agree with him. You know, I think that, you know, when was Freud doing his thing? Like the late 1800s? Not that long ago. And I think we've still got a lot of that shit in our contemporary therapy that needs to kind of like, we really need to shake it off. The idea of, I won't give you advice. I mean, by the way, some therapists do, even though they say they don't, some do. I've had therapists that give advice.
Right.
But him just being like, yeah, I'm going to give you advice because there are a few things that I've figured out. He has his own sort of philosophy, but I don't mean that in a real sense of like philosophy, just he calls them tools, like things he's figured out that he thinks works for people. And I think some of them, I think none of them are too woo-woo for me, because a lot of them feel very, to me at least, intuitive and simple enough to make sense. It's not like The Secret or anything crazy like that. Like a lot of the shit he says, he just, he's good at coming up with like a good metaphor for something. But what he's always essentially saying is, I think, something pretty basic, like take care of your body. That'll make you start feeling better right away, and that'll inspire more change. You know, think of both good things and bad things as equal in a chain of events in your life. Like shit like that. Just like, yeah, this is pretty simple.
And
but sort of brilliantly put.
Yeah. Yeah, his approach is pretty brilliant, and I think it resonates with different kinds of people, because I also see like his respect for visualization and his connection to others and stuff in his approach and in the things he was saying and everything like that. So I do see that interconnectedness and that like universal awareness or consciousness or whatever you want to call it, without it being woo-woo or pushy or like, you know, anything too far out there. There is like a sort of respect and reverence for connection and for, you know, the unseen, I guess.
I actually went into it wanting to be more critical, because I had read a review of it first that was a little bit more critical. And I was like, okay, let's see how woo-woo this is. Let's see, you know, if this guy's a con artist or not. Because as much as, and we've talked on this podcast before about self-help, like I like self-help books, but at the same time that I like them, I'm also super critical of them and kind of go into things with my arms crossed, like super, you know, super cynical and super skeptical. But I think of it the way I think of good self-help books, which is like, look, if you go into it like this is going to be a gospel to me and my life is going to be great because I'm going to follow this like it's a religion, then that's not right. But if you feel like, hey, there are some ideas here, some of them might work for me, some of them might not, some of them I might take and tweak to my own way, then that's fine. That's what everything should be. So I kind of was delighted by the fact that I ended up liking him more than I thought I would, and feeling like, okay, I feel like he's genuine.
Right. Yeah, he also has a manner of speaking and a like presence that seems very like no BS. And I think that adds to that. It makes me feel like I can trust him more, or like what he's saying is more than just a belief or an idea. It's something that's tangible and will work for me. You know what I mean? Like the way I hear it, I'm like, oh, like that just makes sense. And just like side note, I'm thinking about how we're having this conversation and how like this is exactly what he said, what Jonah Hill said that he wanted to make the film for.
Right.
like, well, for people to get these takeaways and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And, you know,
that's another way that you can tell that he's not a con artist, because it wasn't his idea to make the movie. And he also hasn't written right. like 5 books about his ideas. You know what I mean? Like, he clearly, like,
right.
he just used these ideas with his patients. And then one of them mm-hmm. happened to be a movie star. And it was like, why don't I want to make a movie about you?
Yeah. I learned today that apparently he is also Hank Azaria's therapist. And on some podcast, I think it was Mark Maron's podcast, he was talking about Stutz and he did like his impersonation of him or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then he was actually on that podcast. But that, and he was recently on Armchair Expert. That's the only, like, you know, quote unquote self-promotion uh-huh. he's ever done. And it's not even self-promotion. It's him being invited to speak about, you know, his passion and his gift.
Yeah.
And I found it interesting how he was talking about how people have always opened up to him since he was a kid and all that yeah. stuff. I very much identify with that.
Yeah.
I was the type of person who, when I worked at the bookstore, I would be standing up at the register ringing somebody up and somebody would be like, my husband just left me and I am just going to dive into this book because you know what, like, and I'd be like,
wow,
I don't know you. Like, what am uh-huh. I supposed to say to that? And you know, that's going on in my head. I'm able to say like, you'll be okay and all of that stuff. And I think that that's the, it was very affirming for me as a person who's pursuing this career path to hear that. I was like, oh yeah, like that's a thing. And I've been that kind of person forever too.
As someone pursuing this career path, what do you think of his methodology and him saying, I want to actively help people. I want to give advice. You know, I want to basically go against what you're told you should and shouldn't do.
You know, I think it's hard to find that line, because your relationship has to remain ethical. And it can't, you know, it can't delve into that territory. But like, as it is with everything, it means more if there's a human connection there. It just means more. And I think that caring about your patients is incredibly important. I think that you shouldn't be, you know, dissociated from them and just trying to, you know, see it from a bird's eye view and not give advice and just remain impartial and whatever. Like, you should be invested in this person that you're helping, because that's going to make you a better help to them if you care about them.
Yeah.
You should let your heart be open. And yes, that means, you know, that means having to implement your own coping skills to leave work at work. All sorts of things, but yeah. you have to allow yourself to care. Like, that's part of where the gift is. That's part of
yeah.
why a person becomes a helper, is because right, they right. care.
Right, right.
I was very interested. I don't know if you remember, on our dreams episode, I don't know if you remember me talking about how I dream about houses and uh-huh. sometimes it's like my childhood home yeah. or whatever. And I dream about like these secret rooms and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And did you hear what he said, like, towards yes. the end of the documentary?
Yes.
I had to pause it. And I, like, it's just, it's wild to me to hear that somebody who I based upon what I now know of him and whatever I respect. Uh-huh. And I think that he has a pretty grounded opinion of things. I don't think, like you said, that it's too woo-woo and out there. And I'm sure he's heard this enough from patients and seeing what's happening in their lives while they're having these dreams and stuff like that to reach yeah. that conclusion. Like, I don't think he would say something like that lightly. Like, I don't think it's because he saw some meme on Instagram that said it. Like, that's not the person who's speaking.
For the listener, tell us, like, what does he say about people who dream about finding secret rooms in their homes?
So he means that some people dream about their home, but it'll have like a room that's secret and tucked off somewhere, or like this big expansive thing that's somehow hidden or whatever. And it's indicative of an expanding consciousness. It means that, you know, like there are, I guess maybe scientifically, that there are neural pathways that are opening. But what's happening in the dream state, like I experience this often, and I'll be walking through my childhood home, my current home, a friend's old home or whatever, and I find these secret rooms. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
Or I find like some weird staircase. Sometimes it's the same room I'm going back to, sometimes, you know. And just hearing that that's apparently like an experience that a lot of people have, and that it could potentially be indicative of something, because I do think, you know, our subconscious is telling us things in our dreams. I think it's, I found it really affirming. I was like, oh,
yeah,
that feels good.
Yeah.
It felt like I did good at therapy, you know, like like the therapist would have given me a gold star, and that's all I ever want to do.
What
I
did
mean,
you
how affirming to have your therapist tell you they love you.
Yeah, I know, right? The scene that I find,
you've told that person your deepest, darkest, worst things.
Yeah, the scene that I think gets me the most is when Jonah Hill's like, "Do you have a relationship?" And he's like, "Well, I've had an on and off relationship for like 40 years," and then he starts like telling some joke, and he's like, "Don't go into some comedy routine. Stay honest, because I know what you're doing." Yeah. And then, but I like that Stutz is like, "You're right, thank you." Like, he thanks him for redirecting him. And he even says later on, like, "Yeah, after our conversation, I did reach out to her." Like he allowed himself to be helped by his patient.
Yeah.
And it's,
which is another thing that tells you it's not really about ego.
Yeah. It's an interesting dynamic that they have, which is Stutz is a therapist and Jonah Hill is the patient, but Stutz has Parkinson's disease. So Jonah Hill talks honestly about like having a fear of him dying. And they also both lost brothers in their lives that had a huge effect on them. Hold on one second. Sorry. Something going on.
Ghost?
Electricity. Anyway, so it's interesting. You know, I always, every therapist I've ever had, I've always asked them questions, and some are more open than others. But I always ask my therapist questions.
I'm sure.
Of course. Like I want to dig in.
Yeah. I feel like any therapist I've ever had, I just I'm so happy to finally be in a space where I can just let everything out. That's like the time. Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay. I just vented my face off for 45 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
I started rewatching the show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Have you ever watched or heard of it?
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't watch the very last season, but I watched all the rest. Mm. So I didn't see the season where she was like on trial or whatever.
Yeah, I haven't gotten there either. I haven't watched that season. But it's some of the mental health stuff is just so on point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also I started reading Zachary Levi's book.
What is it about?
It's called Radical Love, and it's about like he hit like a rock bottom depression and you know, all this stuff, and it's about like his experience with that. And there has been one thing already that has resonated with me very deeply, and he was talking about how it's like there are two different kinds of anxiety. There's people who have anxiety about what they can't control.
Mm-hmm.
People who are worried about getting hit by a bus or, you know, the world ending and all of these things. And then there's people who have anxiety about the stuff they can control and who just can't make a choice and stuff like that. And that's the kind of anxiety I have. It really helped me to hear it put that way, because I think I sometimes am looking for an answer or for immunity so much that I find myself like, yeah, I guess I could identify with that, when it's not quite what I'm feeling. So seeing that distinction of like being able to fear what you can control versus what you can't control. Like, I'm not scared of a meteor just hitting the earth out of nowhere. I'm not scared I'm going to get hit by a bus tomorrow. Like, I'm not scared of any of that.
Uh-huh.
I'm scared that I'm going to choose the wrong thing and somebody's going to get mad at me, or, you know, it's going to set off a chain of events that's going to be not good for me or somebody I care about. Like, that's my anxiety. And it's also, it feeds into ADHD and choice paralysis and all of that. So really sometimes I just, I do nothing And it looks like I, you know, it looks to the naked eye like I'm doing nothing. But in reality, I'm just battling my brain and I'm laying out scenarios and I'm trying to figure out like what the best course of action is and whatever. And sometimes like my indecision is my choice.
Yeah.
And like that's what happens is the moment just passes me. And I think a great thing that I took away from watching Stutz was that like I have to make a choice in those moments. I have to be moving forward, because all I'm doing when I'm not choosing is I'm not moving linearly. I'm moving, you know, I'm staying static, really. I'm not moving at all. And the time is going to pass anyway. The time's going to pass. And if I spend it deliberating what I should do over and over again, like the moment will pass me by. And it will keep passing me by until I do something about it. So that's another thing that the media I've been taking in lately has been trying to get through to me. Like the woo-woo portion of me or whatever would say, like, that's the message the universe is trying to get through to me right now. That's what I'm hearing in everything I'm consuming. I'm seeing it in writing. I'm watching it in film. I'm hearing it in lyrics. Like, I get that that's the message right now. And, you know, like you have to make active choices. You have to be an active participant in your own life. Like, you can't just, you know, there are times to just go with the flow. And there are perks to being easygoing and chill and laid back and all that good stuff. But it's not bad or greedy or anything like that to pursue, you know, worldly things.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, like, these are the circumstances where I'm like, I feel very constrained by, you know, capitalism and what society looks like right now.
Yeah.
But you have to participate. You can't choose not to, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because you will end up feeling you won't feel safe or secure, and that's important.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, you need means, you need a home, you need money, you need that to be secure in this world. And I think there's a part of me that kind of felt shame for that, or like defiance toward it, where it was like, you know, those are not noble pursuits, and like I don't care about that stuff. And you don't have to care about that stuff because it matters to your, you know, your soul, because it's what your morals are. You can just care about that stuff because it's about securing your safety, and your peace.
Right.
It's another step to taking care of your body. It's a step to, you know, trying to succeed in this lifetime, which is all you get, is this tiny little blip of time is all you get. So do it the way you will.
Yeah. Of all of the like insights and tools or whatever in that Stutz talks about in the movie, what's the one that resonated the most to you, or you thought was the most interesting or true?
It's not like a new idea to me, but the way that he talked about the shadow. And envisioning that part of you as a separate, like, fully embodied person, and how you'd like treat that person and stuff. That's an entirely new idea to me. And it was very thought provoking, because I've never really thought about what exactly my shadow will look like.
Right.
Like, I know, like, the part of me in my head.
Yeah. It's like the part of yourself that you're ashamed of.
In my head, it's just a culmination of everything. Yeah. In my head, it's just the culmination of everything I hate about myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't, you know, it's hard for me to pinpoint to, you know, I'm this age and I feel this way, but seeing that encouraged me to try that as an exercise. And that's cool. I dig that.
Yeah.
What would you say was, what resonated most with you?
Him talking about the life force pyramid, which I know that sounds woo woo when someone says the word force, but it's very, very simple.
Or pyramid.
Yeah, right, exactly. You're like, oh, what are you trying to sell me? Dry shampoo?
Illuminati.
It's very simple, because I think it's intuitive, and it's a thing, something a lot of people say in a lot of different ways. He says, you know, your life force is a pyramid, or think of it as a pyramid. At the bottom is your relationship with your body. Then above that is your relationship with other people. Then at the tip is your relationship with yourself. and from the bottom upward, work that way up. You know, start with the body and making the body feel good and alive and vital. And I think that's so true. That's so true.
That's what I essentially grounding is at its core. You know, it's you have to start from a place where you're in your body, and practicing healthy habits puts you in your body. Yeah. When you're making conscious choices about what you're eating and what you're doing and stuff like it, you can't ignore your physical body.
No, you
can't. But when you're dissociating and numbing, it's pretty easy to ignore your physical body.
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely it is.
Mm-hmm.
Other thing that he said that I liked is, and this isn't just advice, it's just something he said, which is that there are three aspects of reality that no one gets to avoid, and that's pain, uncertainty, and constant work.
Yep.
And that's so true. And constant work can be interpreted in a bunch of different ways.
Yeah.
But I think the way he means it is you have to just keep doing stuff. You have to keep moving.
Mm-hmm. You should always be growing and learning. And
I have a question for you.
Pray tell.
So I've been reading the book Shrill by Lindy West, which I'm late on the bandwagon with her, but you know, she's a very funny writer and she writes about being overweight and why, you know, she loves her body and it's just, she's a very great writer and has a great perspective. And as I was reading it, I realized that I've spent a lot of energy, emotional, spiritual, physical, even energy at trying to lose weight, which is something that I don't try to do anymore. And I realized if there's, and this isn't about regrets, I'm specifically saying energy that I wish I could have back. I wish I hadn't expended so much energy towards that, because the energy could have gone towards other people or art or school or whatever. So my question to you is, what's
it could have been poured into actually caring for yourself.
Yeah. What's something you spent energy on that you wish you could have had that energy back?
Trying to be cool.
Okay.
Like, it's what I thought of immediately, like trying to be cool.
Yeah.
Trying to be liked by the people I thought were cool or whatever, like not being myself.
How did you stop doing it?
I figured out how to like myself, and I learned to enjoy my own company.
Uh-huh.
I spent time figuring out what I like.
Yeah.
What I really like. You know, not what everyone else around me has always liked. Not what I receive a positive response when I say I like. I spent a lot of time denying that person. And that really sucks. That really sucks, because I look back and I'm like, what a cool little kid you are. You were so cool and quirky and weird. And there were people out there for you. There were people for you to connect with and for you to, you know, learn from and all this stuff. And like, I do think about, what if I took a different path? What if I spent that energy elsewhere? What if instead of spending it on, you know, people whose love I would never earn?
Yeah.
What if I spent it on and with people who liked me the way I was?
Right.
How much different could my life have been?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've really been thinking about it in terms of energy, like literal energy. Like, I used to spend so much time plotting and planning and thinking about how to lose weight, as if, you know, not even really thinking about what that meant or what I thought it would get me. And I just think, God damn, I could have climbed a mountain with that energy.
Yeah. And it's also like, it's not even necessarily doing the things that you think are going to be, you know, instrumental to you losing weight or anything. Like, it's just, it's thinking about it and stressing over it and figuring out, you know, what could possibly be good for me to do this, and just stressing, just getting in your head and stressing over it, because actually doing that stuff in a healthy way, not, you know, getting obsessed about some diet or whatever, but actually, like, you know, starting to take care of your body might help to ground you to the point where you don't see the need to fit a certain mold or whatever. I actually was thinking about this today. I remember when I went for a free personal training session, and the trainer was talking to me about my goals. And I kept saying, you know, I just want to keep getting better than I was. I want to keep being able to lift heavier. I want to have better stamina, whatever. And like, he was like, and lose weight. And I was like, no, like, no, like, I didn't say that. I didn't say lose weight.
Yeah.
I don't care. That might happen if all those other feel better in my body. That's what my goal is. It's not, you know, and I think when you change your fitness goal or whatever to that, to feeling good in your body, instead of it being a number or a size or a, whatever, a measurement, a weight, whatever. If you just decide that, like, I just want to feel good in my body. I just want to, because it, I'll tell you, I was relatively fit for a time in my life. And I look back at it sometimes and I don't miss how I look really. Like, it's whatever. It's just how I looked. But I miss how strong I felt.
Uh-huh.
You know, I miss feeling like so like full of life. And, you know, like that's what taking care of myself brought me. Who cares about the fact that I was in a different size pants or whatever? I don't give a shit. Right. I was happy. Matters. I don't care if I'm happy at this size or that size. That's not what I'm striving for. The size has nothing to do with it. It's that feeling of I'm taking up my space in this world or whatever, and I'm owning that, and I'm being strong in that body and in that, you know, physicality.
Well, it goes back to the life force pyramid thing, where like the first part is your relationship with your body, and. In my life, a lot of times I would kind of be there, but I would fuck it up because I would make that about losing weight. Like, okay, the first thing is to get better with my body. I gotta be thinner. And it's like, no, like, it's like I was so close to the goal, but then I would fuck it up last minute because it's like I was confusing. I confusing losing weight and being healthy is I do it all the time, and lots of people do it, and being able to like really just think about health and have no thought in your mind about whether or not you're losing weight is like, that's really feels good and is fun. And actually like all the changes you make feel good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It's true. And for me, the unfortunate like turn, the fork in the road that I reach or whatever, where I often end up going the wrong way and self-sabotaging, is when I get to the point where I feel good. I feel good. I feel comfortable in my body. I'm feeling great, blah, blah, blah. And I think that I have to keep going further. And, and that going further means getting smaller.
Yeah.
And that's terrible.
Yeah.
And dangerous. It's not a great way to think. And you know, I'm working constantly to get to a point where if and when I reach that fork, you know, where I'm about to start self-sabotaging again and whatever, that I'm able to tell myself, like, it's not about any of that. How do you feel? You're not like, just, you don't have to try to feel better than yesterday. If you feel good, just try to maintain the feeling.
Yeah.
You don't have to be trying, like, yes, try, you should always be trying to be better than yesterday, blah, blah, blah. That doesn't mean, you know, to not be content.
Yeah. Well, look, we're almost out of time. Do you have a question for me?
I do, and it's so much less introspective.
No caveats.
My question for you is if you could meet and communicate with and, like, befriend any mythical creature, what would it be?
Wow. That's a great question. Mythical creature. Well, I just rewatched the Lord of the Rings movies because Alamo played them 3 Saturdays in a row. And I think I'd like to befriend a hobbit.
Ooh, delightful.
I feel like hobbits are like the best. Like they're like the best of us. They're like, they're chill. They just want to have fun and eat and smoke weed and have friends. They don't want to they don't want excitement in their lives. They just want to chill and live in their cute little houses. I would love to like be friends with a hobbit and like learn from them.
Yeah, that's the vibe.
Absolutely. What about you? What would you answer that?
Oh boy, like a dragon friend.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that would be really good for me.
Would you want to ride it or just
be friends with it? I feel like having, yeah, 100%. Oh no, I'm like, it's my, you know, it's like my companion and whatever. And like, I ride the dragon, like the dragon and I, you know, like we take care of each other. The dragon.
Have you watched the How to Train Your Dragon movies?
You know what's so funny? I've seen the first one, maybe. I have no recollection of them. And I know I would love them.
The first one's really good.
Like, I find the art adorable.
Yeah.
I feel like I would probably love them, but I've just never watched them.
Watch the first one.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's your recommendation?
Yeah.
Do you have a recommendation?
How to Train Your Dragon.
No, my recommendation.
I do. My recommendation is The Orange Years on Hulu.
Aha!
A delightful documentary about Nickelodeon. All the nostalgia, all the feels, delightful. So great to see our old friends. We love it.
My recommendation would be the book I mentioned, Shrill by Lindy West. It's funny. It's poignant. It makes you think. It's really good.
Now, I'm assuming that's the basis for the show.
Yes. Shrill,
with Adi Bryant. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember watching at least a few episodes of that and enjoying it. But I will check out that book because it sounds like it's up my alley.
All right. Well, everyone, thank you so much for listening and being here. And we love you.
We really do.
We'll see you next time.
See ya.